day is based on the book of Esther. We have been speaking to you out of the book of Esther last Sunday, if you remember, and we arrived to where we find that Haman is coming in to ask the king if Mordecai could be hanged on the gallows. And we left the king pondering what he would do with that one whom he desired to honor. This king, he had a sleepless night. And during the night when he couldn't sleep, he had one of his servants bring the book of Chronicles to him. And they found that in the book of Chronicles, Mordecai, the Jew that sat at the gate, he had done a very good deed for the king. He had discovered unto the king two persons that had sought the king's life. And he had made it known to Esther, and Esther had made it known to the king, and they sought the matter out, and sure enough, it was true. And these two men had been hung on the gallows because they attempted to assassinate the king. And now when the king read this and heard it read to him, he asked what had been done unto Mordecai for this good deed. And they said, nothing. Now, this to the king seemed to be something that he should have taken care of before already. He probably had forgotten all about the matter. But now he desires that this man should be rewarded for what he had done. In this, my hearers, we have a lesson. Anybody do anything for you in your past life? Anybody ever do a good favor to you? And you forgot all about the matter? So far gone, so much time has gone by, you don't even think you should pay any attention to anymore or reward the person that did you a favor. Here we have this king. He had it written in the book. And now he decided that he would reward this man. And now no matter how long it's ago that somebody done something good for you and you never rewarded them for the good that they did to you, think of it, my hearers. If the party is still living and you're sufficiently able to reward that person, do so. Don't put it off. Oh, how often this happens in life. Many a person, I've met him myself, they've been in poverty. Somebody stepped in and helped them out, loaned them money, gave them to do things that they needed to do. After they got back on their feet, they forgot all about paying the person that loaned them the money. They don't owe it to them anymore. This lesson teaches us that we should be mindful of those that have helped us in our past life when we were in need or did a good turn to us. And now this king, he wanted to reward Mordecai, but he didn't know how. And now he saw someone in the court, and he says to his attendants, who is in the court, in the outer court? They said, well, Haman is there. And now Haman, he came to seek to have Mordecai hanged, and the king is seeking to reward Mordecai. How wonderful is the providence of God. One man wants a reward to one, and the other one's looking to have his life taken away. And now when this Haman was called to be before the king began to speak to him immediately and said to him, what should be done to the man whom the king desireth to honor? Well, thought Haman, who would the king want to honor any more than me? Notice this man, who he was thinking about. He only thought of himself. This man was a very proud man. And in through being exalted to the position that he had by the king, his pride was increased. Pride is an awful sin, my hearers. It was pride that led Adam and Eve to to fall away from God. They wanted to be like God, even possible above God. Pride is awful. Every one of us have a certain amount of pride. You often hear people say, "Oh, he's so proud," or "she's so proud." You know, pride lurketh in our bosoms, and pride is haughty. Pride is disdainful. Persons are proud about sometimes their looks, sometimes their riches, sometimes about their education. People that are proud, they look down upon others and think they're better than them. Now, this shouldn't be, my hearers, for pride cometh before destruction, and a haughty spirit before a fall, Solomon teaches us. And here we have this man. Right away he thinks the king should honor him. Who else would the king want to honor but him? He only had himself in view. And then he begins to speak. And he says to the king, "To the man that the king wants to honor, this should be done to him. The royal apparel that the king wears should be brought out, and the horse that the king rides on should be brought out, and the crown that's put upon the horse when the king is led in state should be put upon this horse, and the man that the king wants to honor, well, he should get one of the most noblest princes in his realm, and have him dressed in this royal apparel, and have him set upon the horse, and have this prince go before him through the city proclaiming, 'This is the man that the king delighteth to honor.'" You take notice what was in the heart of this man, Haman? What did he want to be? Well, he wanted to be king himself. If possible, that's what he was aiming at. Oh, he wanted to be dressed like the king, and he wanted to ride on the horse of the king, and he wanted everybody in the city to look at him and to do him reverence. That's what he had in his mind, and that's what he had in his heart, and that's what he let out. It's plain enough. And now when he had spoken this to the king, then the king said, "Do so to Mordecai the Jew that sitteth at the gate, and let not any of the words fail that thou hast spoken." Oh, could you picture this man? What an awful thing this was for this man. I think he was thunderstruck. He was dumbfounded. Why, he had just come, and he thought he was probably getting a good opportunity to ask this king for Mordecai to be hung, and now the king, he desired that Mordecai would be honored in this way. Oh, how mortifying this was to this man's pride. And now, of course, he couldn't refuse the order of the king. And yeah, he had to go ahead and do that. Now these kings in Persia, they wore robes. They were purple and white. And nobody else was allowed to wear a robe like that because it was a capital crime. A person that wore a robe like that would be killed. The horses that these kings had, they got them from Armenia. And they were a beautiful type of a horse. And this crown, they put upon the head of the horse, and they sat the king on it, and then they proclaimed before him. And now, this man, Haman, he had to go to Mordecai. He had to make known to him what the king wanted to do, how he wanted him to be honored. Mordecai didn't refuse. So this Haman, he had to array him in this royal apparel, and he set him upon the horse, and he put the crown on the horse's head, and he went through the city. He was the prince that had to proclaim before this man that this was the man that the king delighted to honor. And now he brought him back again after doing this, and we find that Mordecai went to his same position at the gate. He wasn't lifted up in pride. He didn't think anything of himself because this had been done to him. But we find that Haman, he went back to his home, mourning, and his head covered. Oh, how downcast this man was. I thought, if that man had only been brought in the right way, mourning and downcast, he would have returned back to Mordecai, and he would have confessed to him what he was planning to do with him and asked him for his forgiveness. But no such repentance was to be found in this man Haman. He was just deeply humbled and broken down because his pride had received such a blow. And now he went home to his wife and to his friends. He had to tell somebody what had happened to him. This was the commencement of Haman's fatal downfall. He went to his home and he told his wife and his friends just what had taken place. They didn't comfort him one bit. Maybe he sought comfort there, but they had no comfort for him. For his wife and his friends and the wise men that he had, they began to say to him, well, if you're beginning to fall before this man Mordecai, who is of the seed of the Jews, you most certainly will fall. This was the comfort that he got off his own wife and off his friends. They seen in it already that he was going to be toppled down from that seat of honor that he had into eternal destruction. And this man, he was so under the impression of what had taken place with him that he forgot all about the invitation that he had. He had been invited with the king to the banquet that Esther was to have that very day. And now if he had had that on his mind, he would have been very anxious and had prepared himself to go to that banquet. But he went back home, mourning, and covered his head with cloth. He thought no more about that banquet. And you read so distinctly that the chamberlains of the king, they came to his house to take him and to bring him to the banquet that he was to be at with the queen and with the king. And when they took him back to the queen's, to the king's palace, then they went into this place where Esther had prepared the banquet of wine. And now the king, he again speaks unto Esther, and he renews his promise. He says unto her, what is thy petition? What is thy request? For it shall be granted unto thee, even if it be to the half of the kingdom. This was only an earthly king, and this was the third time that he promised this to Esther. This opened the way again for her to present her petition to him. Thinking of this, I thought, this man, he had control of the lives of the people who he was ruler over. And now, the King of Kings in heaven above, he has given so many promises in his precious word. And there may be some amongst my hearers who have had a promise applied to their own soul in this life. And this king is more faithful than this earthly king. He renewed it three times, but this king in heaven above, he invites us to come to him. He tells us, ask and you shall receive, knock and you shall be opened, seek and ye shall find. Open thy mouth wide, he says, and I will fill it. Jesus teaches, ask in my name, and ye shall receive. He invites us. Shouldn't we? Where our lives and our souls are at stake, shouldn't we be more bold and more filled with zeal to come to this King, to beseech him that he would fulfill the promises probably that he has spoken unto your own heart? This King opened the way for Esther to reveal unto him what her petition was. He knew not her petition. He knew not what she was going to ask for. And she immediately begins to speak and says, if I have found favor in the sight of thee, O King, then this is my petition. I beseech thee that thou would save me for my life and the life of my people are at stake. We have been sold to be destroyed, to perish and to be slain. This has been done to us. If the enemy had sold us for bondmen and bondwomen, then I would have held my peace. But we have been sold to be destroyed, to be slain and to perish. It was a matter then of life and death for Esther. Imagine the surprise of this King when she presented this petition to him. She didn't ask for wealth. She didn't ask for honor. She didn't ask for anything for her friends. But she asked for life. She asked for the life likewise of her people. Oh, how pathetic was her plea. How earnest was her plea. She begged for her own life and for the life of the Jewish people. And this King, he was so surprised. For he says, who has this in their heart to do this? In other words, who is planning to murder the Queen and her friends? Whoever would have it in their heart to do something like that? And now this King, he had even signed his own name to that degree that it should be done. There's another lesson here, my hearers. Often, when sins are pointed out to us, great sins, terrible sins, why we shrink from them. We are frightened because of them. But when in our solemn moments we contemplate ourselves, then we are guilty of the same thing. And that's what happened to this King. He likewise was guilty of this decree that he had written and that he had signed and that he had sent throughout all his 127 provinces. And now this woman Esther, she pleads before him for her life and for the life of her people. Oh, my hearers, she's a type of every soul that has been convicted of sin, that has been given to see that God would be just if he punished them to all eternity. Every one of us by nature are under the sentence of death in and through sin. And death most certainly shall take place and come upon us. We know not how soon. It is then a matter, and not only of our natural life, but it's a matter for our eternal destiny, that we, like Esther, should go in unto the King and plead before him. to those that have been given to see and to feel and to realize their state and condition by the Spirit of God. And they earnestly plead that he would save them, that he would grant unto them eternal life. And let my soul live, they say, and my lips shall praise thee. Oh, they're so earnest, not only for their own soul, but like Esther, they are busy at the throne of grace for their relatives, for their friends, and for their neighbors that live round about them. Oh, they are praying souls seeking a salvation, not only for themselves, but for others. Are you such a soul? Are you pleading? Are you praying to God that he would remember you and save you? For you deserve to die. You deserve to be destroyed. You deserve to be slain. You deserve to perish eternally. A little different than Esther. Esther, she's pleading for herself and for her people, for their natural lives. But you're pleading for your immortal soul, for your eternal welfare. Are there such amongst me? Oh, I wish every one of you were like that, my hearers. Oh, I would encourage you to go forward and plead. Oh, storm the throne of grace. Be violent there. Oh, pray that he would save you, your children, your friends, your relatives, and everyone round about you. What a mercy it is that we have been taught to do this by the Spirit of God. And now this king, when he heard this request of Esther, then he was so filled with surprise, as I said. He couldn't believe that there was anybody that would seek to destroy the king, the queen, and her friends. And now he says, who is it that would presume to do such a thing? And she answers, this wicked Haman. She tells him right to his face, he's the man. He's the man that's plotting and planning to ruin me and the people of the Jews. Oh, she accuses him right in the front of the king. And oh, the king, he arose in his wrath. He became very angry, and he went into the palace garden. Oh, and we find Haman, he likewise arises, and he begins to plead before Esther for his life, because he saw that evil was going to come upon him from the king. And this king went out into the garden in his wrath, in his anger. Oh, whenever you get angry, whenever you get into a fit of temper, my hearers, it's best to go somewhere alone first before you say anything or do anything. That's what this king did. So many, they don't give themselves time to think, but they do things which they afterwards are very sorry of. This king went out into the garden and he began to think. He began to think how he had elevated this man, Haman, how he had done so much good to him, and how he had been deceived by him in signing his name to that degree that all the Jews should be destroyed. And all the more that he thought about it, the more exasperated he became himself that he had been an accomplice in doing this. And while he was meditating upon this, thinking what he should do to Haman, he comes back out of the palace garden. And we find this man, Haman, he's begging Esther for his life. Oh, how different is this man, Haman, now. Oh, when he was the man, he was an insolent, he was a proud creature. Everybody had to do him reverence and bow before him. But now you see him, he's laying at the feet of Esther. Oh, he's begging, he's entreating her for his life. And now she must have fell on the bed, and he on the bed was pleading with her for his life. And when the king came back into the room where the banquet had been held, and then he seen this Haman lying on the bed by the queen. And he said, will he force the queen in our own home, he says. And the words had no more than entered out of his mouth. And then someone came and laid a cloth over Haman's face. The king took occasion at this. He knew very well that Haman wouldn't do something like that in his own home, but he took occasion at this so that Haman would also be executed and be done away with. And those that stood at the side of the king, when they heard the king in his anger speak like this, they before had done reverence to Haman. They had bowed before him. They probably had not liked him very much. But now they were ready to do service to the king. And they immediately took hold of Haman, and they covered him with cloth. They covered his face so that he could not see the king anymore. This was done to people that were to be hanged. And now there was one of those chamberlains that had went for Haman, and he had seen the gallows that Haman had built for Mordecai. And he mentions to the king, a man by the name of Harbona, and he says, behold the gallows that Haman has erected to hang Mordecai on. And the king immediately says, hang him thereon. The sentence is short. The execution is swift. He is immediately sentenced to be hung. And they took him and they hung him on the gallows that he had prepared for Mordecai. This man who had been looking forward to be reverenced, to be looked at, to be admired, and to be honored by all, was now lifted up to be made a spectacle. And those that saw him could see how wonderful the providence of God is and how he fulfills his word that pride cometh before destruction and a haughty spirit before a fall. This man, Haman, he was hung justly on the gallows that he had erected unjustly for Mordecai. This man then, he was destroyed by being hung. He lost his immortal soul. He was lost to all eternity. His greatest sin was that he sought the destruction of God's church, the Jewish people. That was his greatest sin. And now we find, my hearers, that after this, the king was pacified because Haman had been hung. And then we find Esther speaking unto the king and telling him who that Mordecai was to her. She had never made known to the king what relative he was to her, that he was her cousin, and that he had taken care of her because she had been an orphan and he had raised her up, and that he was like a father unto her, and he had counseled her to go in unto the king and plead before him. And now when the king heard this, he was deeply indebted to Mordecai because he was married to Esther, and therefore he took the ring that had been on the hand of Haman and he placed it on the finger of Mordecai. And that day the king gave the house of Haman his whole estate and all the wealth that he had acquired unto Esther. And Esther, she placed Mordecai over this house and over this estate. And here we have two people, Esther and Mordecai. They had been mourning, they had been crying, they had been weeping, they had been very sorrowful because they were destined to be slain. And now they are exalted by the hand of God. Mordecai then is placed in the position that Haman had. And now we find Esther again approaching the king. She was safe enough now. She wouldn't be slain. She wouldn't be destroyed. But those poor Jewish people, this king had made a decree, and according to the laws of the Medes and the Persians, they couldn't reverse that decree. That had to stand. This was an odd thing that they had in this land, because many times you make certain resolutions and decrees, and afterwards when you consider it, then you wish you could reverse it. Therefore, in our laws, and in the laws of other lands, a law can always be repealed. It can always be amended. But in that country, the law could not be repealed or amended. And therefore, it stood, these poor Jewish people, on the 13th day of the 12th month of that year, that they were to be slain, to be destroyed. They were to perish. Their enemies were to have the upper hand over them, and the deputies and the lieutenants and the governors of those provinces were to help to do that. That was the decree of the king. It was signed with his signature. It could not be reversed. Therefore, she comes into the king and prays to him with tears, and she falls down before him and begs him that he would reverse the writing that Haman had obtained to destroy these Jewish people. I guess he had to think first what he should do, because he had put his signature on that. And now to reverse that and to change that, that would hold him up to a spectacle to all his people that he was guilty of that. And therefore, he in his wisdom, he gave it over into the hands of Esther and Mordecai. He said unto them, you write what you wish should be done, and take my ring and take my signature and assign it to it, and that shall be done, whatever you decree. And we find that Esther and Mordecai, they wrote writings that on that particular day, then the Jews should stand up for their life, and that they should destroy all those that hated them and opposed them, and that the deputies and the lieutenants and the governors should assist the Jewish people. And these writings they wrote in various languages, and they sent them throughout all the provinces that King Ahasuerus was king over, and they wrote it in different languages. And the Jews, when they heard this and received this decree, oh, they were so happy and so glad. Now, to me and you, you would say, well, what do they want to do now? Do the Jews want to destroy their enemies, kill all these people? Now, this was in the third month of the year, and it was 9 months away that this was to take place. When I was reading that, I thought, what? You wouldn't want to kill anybody. But the decree that the king had made concerning the Jews had to take place. And this decree was to oppose all their enemies. All the Jewish people were to stand up and fight against them that would oppose them. And this was a legitimate war. It was a civil war. It was a war that was to take place under the provinces of Ahasuerus. But it was a righteous war. because neither one of those degrees could be altered or could be changed. And therefore, on that particular day, we read that the Jews in all the provinces, they got together. They didn't scatter away from each other, but they stood together, united. And when any of their enemies came to do them hurt, then they fought against them and slew them. This took place in the 12th month, on the 13th day of that month. It is written that 75,000 of the Jews' enemies were slain throughout the provinces. 500 were slain in the capital of the city, Shushan, right in the palace where the king reigned. This then was a day that was to be remembered for the Jews. It was a day that God had risen for their assistance. They didn't attack their enemies. They didn't go hunting for them. But anyone that came up against them, they fought against them and slew them. They did not take any of their spoil. They were permitted to do so. The decree said so. But they took nothing. They only opposed their enemies that rose up against them. And the fear of these Jewish people fell upon so many of these heathens that they proselyted and became Jews too. And this man, Mordecai, he rose to great honor in the realm of Ahasuerus. He was next to the king, and what he decreed and what he ordered took place throughout the whole realm. This man, Mordecai, then was lifted up far above all other princes that served this great king Ahasuerus. How wonderful do we see the providence of God in this, what has taken place. These days were to be remembered by the Jews. The 14th day and the 15th day of that month were to be remembered, because Esther, she went in and pleaded with the king that the next day they would be able to do the same thing in the palace at Shushan, because it seems that Haman, he had 10 sons, and these sons, they had acquired a great number of people to oppose the Jews and, if possible, destroy them. And now Esther, she found out about this, and she had these 10 sons of Haman hanged upon the gallows. And the next day, the Jews in the palace at Shushan were permitted by the king's order to slay and to destroy anyone that opposed the Jews. So there was 2 days that the Jews observed for this particular deliverance. It was registered in the book, and they were to remember this throughout all their generations. They were to tell their coming generation, the children that would be born, how wonderful God had protected them and delivered them from being destroyed. This concludes our explanation of the book of Esther. Next week, the Lord willing, we will take up the subject of Daniel and the wonderful things that God did with this man. That's all for today, my hearers.